Well, here in Champaign-Urbana, in our area, this spring, there is a program going on that's been organized by the folks at the Champaign Public Library. And other libraries, other places around the country have done this. It's one of those programs where they're encouraging everybody in town to read the same book. And the book this time around that has been chosen here by folks locally is Ray Bradbury's novel, Fahrenheit 451. And as well as encouraging people to read the book, the library has organized a number of different kinds of things, programs and so forth, that relate to the basic theme of the book, freedom of expression and censorship. We thought it might be interesting this morning to talk with someone, the person who generally is credited with coming up with this idea of let's all read the same book. And her name is Nancy Pearl. She is the executive director of the Washington Center for the Book at the Seattle Public Library. She's worked as a librarian and a bookseller in a number of places around the country, Detroit, in Tulsa, in Seattle. And back in 1988, she developed this program, If All of You Fill in the Blank, your city here, If All of You Read the Same Book. It started there and has spread across the country, and now many, many cities have done this. She is also the author of a recently published book that's titled Book Lust. The subtitle is Recommended Reading for Every Mood, Moment, and Reason. Sasquatch is the publisher, and it's a book that's intended to do what librarians do all the time, and that is make suggestions for people who are interested in reading something. It has a number of favorite books of hers organized in various categories, and it's conveniently pocket-sized, so you could put it in your pocket and take it with you to the library, and then it will make some suggestions on various kinds of titles. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about how it is that she got this idea of having everybody read the same book, and if other folks have questions, would like to talk with her, the phone lines are open, as always. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Ms. Pearl, hello.
Hello, David.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Please call me Nancy.
Oh, all right. I will do that. We'll be on a first-name basis.
Yes, let's not be formal.
It's really good to have you, and particularly since this is, after all, National Library Week.
It is.
And of course, reading in books, people who are associated with books, writers, booksellers, librarians, and of course readers, we like people like that, and we always like to be talking about books and reading, so we're glad you could do it.
I'm very happy to be here. I love talking about good books to read, and I love helping people find just the right book for just the right moment.
Well, and that is one of the things that librarians do like to do, and I'm always struck by the fact that I wonder, do people, when they go to the library, do they know they can talk to the librarian? Do they know they can say, can go up to the librarian and even ask a question like that and say something like, I'm interested in this kind of a book, and actually give them a niche or a category. And I expect that probably a lot of librarians would say, oh, well, sure, here's try this or try that. And that's really what your book is intended to do.
It is. It's the kind of book list is the kind of book, if you don't have a librarian handy, and every probably most librarians' favorite statement when somebody comes up to the desk, favorite and scariest, is if somebody says, can you recommend a good book to read, when it's so clear they don't exactly know what they want. So book list is intended for that kind of reader who just wants to browse through a wide variety of fiction and nonfiction, mysteries, fantasy, even children's books. I've included a couple of categories of children's books just to find something great to read.
And this is your personal kind of list? You have actually read all these books?
I have read. This is a book that's a result of many, many decades of reading, and it's about 1,800 individual titles. It sounds so awesome. I mean, it just sounds like such a huge number. But when I just, when I look through the book myself, I just find most of my favorite books are here. And I have to say that when I finished the book, I had a week of pure happiness, thinking that every book I ever loved was in Book Lust. And then I started waking up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat thinking, oh my gosh, I forgot Anthony Trollope, and I forgot this person and that person. So I'm doing a sequel, which will be out in a year and a half, and it's going to be called Book Lust 2, The Morning After.
I like that very much. Very good. Book Lust 2, the morning after. I thought it would be interesting to have you talk a little bit about the idea of the One City, One Book project and how it is that you came up with that. This was 4 years ago, I think.
Oh, no, about 1998.
Oh, 1998.
6 years ago.
Six years ago.
Right.
What got you thinking about encouraging, picking one thing and encouraging everybody to read that book?
Well, one of the things I strongly believe is that one of the roles of a library is to introduce people to books they might not have read. The second function that I think a library serves in a community is as a community gathering place, that it's a builder of community. And the third thing is that I really believe that through good discussion about a book, you broaden and deepen your appreciation for that particular work of literature.
Hmm.
So for me, libraries are all about reading and discussion. And when the Seattle Public Library had gotten a grant from the Wallace Foundation to build audiences for literature. And I thought, what could be better? Let's pick a book that's just wonderful for discussion, and let's invite people from all walks of life, all ethnicities, all ages, all conditions and sorts, to come together in public places to talk about this particular book.
The first book that you selected was a novel by Russell Banks, The Sweet Hereafter.
How did
you pick that particular book? Because that's not necessarily light reading.
Well, now I have to say that many books that we would consider light reading don't make for good discussions.
Hmm.
Because there's nothing to say about them besides, gee, did you like the Pelican Brief or not? So what you want is a book that really talks about either some sort of moral dilemma that the major character is in, as in Fahrenheit 451, or a change, an event in society, or, as in the case of Russell Banks' The Sweet Hereafter, how do you deal with grief? Because it's the story of a school bus accident in a small town. Many of the town's children are killed, and the story is told from the point of view of four of the characters. The bus driver, who may or may not have been responsible for the accident, the parent of two of the children who were killed, the lawyer who comes into town to make a quick buck, and one of the children who was not killed but was paralyzed as a result of the accident. And grief is a universal. Grief is something that we're all going to face in our lives one time or another. And talking about grief and the way we deal with grief, I think, is the sort of thing that builds that kind of community that I think that we need more of in this society. So it's partly a kind of high-flown philosophical notion of everybody reading the same book. At the same time, I think it would be a shame to go through life without having read Fahrenheit 451 or the other books that we've chosen for our project.
Mm. We have a caller, and I'm told that this is a second grader calling in from a school, from Unity East Elementary. So
mm-hmm.
Why don't we find out what is on the mind of this young person. Hi there. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Bailey Wilson from second grade at Unity East Elementary. Mm-hmm. I have some ideas.
What are your ideas?
For adults, they should read Boy. And for families, they should read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Uh-huh.
And for adults, they should read Wind, Sand, and Sky. For families, The Little Prince.
Those are great suggestions. And Wind, Sand, and Sky by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, his plane was just found after 60 years of being lost. So that would be, and it's beautifully, beautifully written. And actually, I have that book mentioned. That's one of the books I recommend in my book list, is Wind, Sand, and Stars, or Wind, Sand, and Sky.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for the thought. We appreciate that. And other, I guess maybe I should have mentioned at the beginning of the show that if you were interested in doing the same sort of thing, if there's a particular book that you enjoyed that you would like to call in and recommend and say, look, this is a great book and I would suggest other people to read it, That would be great. You would certainly be welcome to do that. So 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. I'm told that when you did this first, let's all read the same book with the Sweet Hereafter, at least in the stories that I have read, that booksellers around the Seattle area said that they had sold 10,000 copies of The Sweet Hereafter. And I'm sure for a serious novel, that's a lot. That's the kind of thing that would come to the attention of booksellers, publishers, and writers. And for that reason, I would guess then, as this idea took hold, not only as you did it over and over again in Seattle, but as other people in different cities did it, I would guess that the organizers, or I would wonder whether the organizers started to be lobbied, perhaps heavily, by people who would say, please, please, right. use my book, please.
Yes, that is true. And one of the ways that we avoid that being influenced in any way in Seattle is that we have a very, very, very small selection committee. A colleague and I meet with various community groups who are booksellers, publishers, authors in the Seattle area. We get suggestions from them as to who they think would be, what book they think would be good, whether the author has been in Seattle recently, whether they're a good presenter. Because one of our quirks is that we always bring the author in to spend about 4 days with the people, the readers of Seattle. But I do get so many books from people who say, oh, choose my book, choose my book. So, but we have very specific, we're looking for very specific types of books. I mean, we're looking for books that will cause people to really, really think about their lives and the kind of common humanity, really, that Ray Bradbury writes about in Fahrenheit 451, and the hard decisions that people sometimes have to make in their lives.
One of the things that I wondered about, and I expected that you wondered about it too, was when you thought about the people who were excited by the idea and who were reading the books and perhaps taking part in some discussion groups and going to some of the events that were organized around the idea, whether these were people who were readers already, they weren't doing anything any different than usual, except perhaps they said, oh, well, why don't I read that book? Or whether this kind of program might have drawn in some people who were not like you and other people were not habitual readers.
I think it did both. I think that normal book groups, that is regular book groups that meet monthly or whatever at libraries or in private homes, added this selection to their list of books that they were going to read. But I do think that every year we bring in people who are unfamiliar with the particular book that we've chosen or a particular author that we've chosen, or are people who for whom the description of the book sounds interesting, so they'll come to the library for that particular discussion. And, of course, what we hope is that once they come to the library, they see the untold riches that are within a library and will come back. And the other thing that we do every year is do a discussion guide for the book and the author that we've chosen. And we give 10 or 12 discussion questions, which we think help keep the discussion going, focus on those aspects of the book that at least the people who wrote our discussion guide thought were important. Mm.
That's something else, an interesting phenomenon, the book group. Now, maybe there always were groups like this, but it seems that it's something that's more popular than it has been, that libraries are sponsoring them, bookstores are sponsoring them. So not only are people reading and doing that in the privacy of their own home or doing that for themselves, but then they're getting together with other people who have read the book and they're talking about the books.
I think that for some people it provides a purely social kind of occasion to get together. And so there's very little talking about the book. And that's fine. Whatever makes people happy and gets them together, I think is just great. What I really, really like is that is the idea of people building a common language from talking about a series of books time after time after time. People who have read each one of the now six or seven books that we've selected, when I sit in on their book discussions, I can hear them say, oh, remember when Russell Banks talked about this particular character, or this year we're reading Isabel Allende's books, and they'll say, well, doesn't Eva Luna remind you in some ways of another character who appeared in an earlier book? And I think the more connections people can make with one another, the better a sort of world we'll have.
Mm. Let's talk with someone else. There's a caller in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Hi, good morning. I had a quick question about a book. I have a book that I really enjoyed, and I've recommended it to some friends, and they liked it, but one is having trouble finding it, and I'm just curious if perhaps this may be a book that is challenged, if that's the right word. I read A Million Little Pieces by James Frey, which is, I guess, less fiction and more, I guess it's an autobiographical book, but I've had a friend who's had a very difficult time finding it, so I just didn't know if you'd read that or if you'd heard anything about it being less available.
No, I'm not familiar with it, but I would suggest that person just go to their local library and ask them to interlibrary loan it.
Okay.
And they should be able to get it very easily.
Yeah, it's a book about addiction and that sort of thing, so I just kind of wondered if perhaps either it's really popular and it's never in, or...
they can put it on, if the library doesn't own it, and if they do own it, you could, of course, put it on hold, but if not, then they can borrow it from another library. The library can borrow it from another library for your friend. But many times those books about addiction and books go out of print very quickly these days.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Oh. It costs publishers a lot of money to keep a huge stock of books on hand, so they declare them out of print, and then that saves them. Then they're unavailable, basically.
Right, right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank
You're
you
welcome.
For the call. Others are certainly welcome to call. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. I'm just here. I'm on the computer in front of me. I'm checking into the website of here of a popular online bookseller who shall remain nameless, and they do list the book that the caller mentioned, A Million Little Pieces by James Frey. That's Frey. So apparently the book is in print. That's not an issue. There's even an audio cassette and CD of it, version of it. So the book is out there. So maybe that as Nancy suggests, that the thing to do is to ask the library to see if they can get it for you.
You know, the best book I ever read about the nature of addiction in general is a wonderful memoir by a woman named Carolyn Knapp, K-N-A-P-P. And it's in a section in Book Lust called Lost Weekends. And Carolyn Knapp's memoir is called Drinking, A Love Story. Hmm. And it's the first book. It's not a how-to or a how-to-stop drinking, but rather it explores what it means to be so attracted to something that you know is going to kill you.
Yeah, okay.
Very powerful, very, very moving, and I highly recommend that.
We have some other calls we will get to in just a second here. We have mentioned that we talked a little bit about the book that our guest Nancy Pearl has authored, Book Lust, which is a kind of a personal reading list of hers. It has a list of many very different books, some children's books, fiction, nonfiction, organized in different categories. Now you're saying to yourself, Dave, how could I get one of these books? Well, we can make it possible for you to have a copy of the book and at the same time support this radio station. How could you possibly do better than that? Jack Brighton, the emeritus producer, Focus 580, here in the studio with us. We're going to encourage people to go to the phone and give us a call, make a pledge, and they could get a copy of the book.
That's right, 244-9455 to get a copy of the book and make a pledge. And I believe we said a $75 pledge to the Friends of WILL, and it also gets you the member card, which I have saved a ton of money going out to dinner using the member card because you get 2-for-1 deals at a whole bunch of restaurants in this and other areas around the U.S. So 244-9455. Make sure to ask the person who takes your pledge for the copy of Book Lust, and we'll be happy to send that to you. And it is a great book. I really want to get a copy myself. You know, we're talking about books going out of print. Folks, we don't want to go out of print on this radio station here. So help us keep it going with your pledge. That's what it takes. It takes a lot of people chipping in just a little bit each to basically make it possible for WILL and public radio in general. Our goal for this week is $160,000 raised. And we know we can do that. And the way we do it is one pledge at a time. You can help us make that goal by making a pledge call, 244-9455.
Yeah, we're always looking for little ways to see if we can encourage people, something that will inspire you to go to the telephone. And we thought offering as a pledge incentive, given the fact that here on this program we like to interview authors and we like to talk about reading and books, that something like Book Lust would just be perfect. Would be perfect incentive. So that's the deal. You can support this station, which we know you value, and you can get one of these books. And I think if you're a reader and you're looking for suggestions, you would enjoy this, Book Lust by Nancy Pearl. So at a $75 level, that plus the member card, plus the feeling, the good feeling that comes with knowing that you support the station that you use. Right.
Absolutely. And here on Focus 580, we have Book Lust. We actually really love
we
books.
We do.
And we do a lot of author interviews. In fact, you know, Champaign-Urbana is in a reading frenzy on Fahrenheit 451 right now. We had an interview with Ray Bradbury just a year and a half ago or so. And that and many other interviews, I want to make sure to mention, are on our website. The archives of everything we do here at WILL, all our local programs are archived on our website, so you can listen to them anytime you want in real audio format. And recently we added MP3 downloads of all the shows that we're doing, so you can actually download them onto your computer and use iTunes or whatever program you want, put them on your portable player and listen to them while you jog. There's a great idea. Exercise your mind at the same time as you work out.
You really should be on the part of the development staff. You know that. Jack is now
really
our internet guru. He used to be producer on this show, and then he moved over, and so now he's our director of internet operations, and he's the guy who's responsible for doing things like finding new and good things to do with the website.
Right. Yeah. So you can use the website to listen to the show and go back in time and hear Ray Bradbury and a number of other authors we've had on the show, and we hope you will support that as well. 217-244-9455 to make your pledge.
And it is actually also possible to pledge on the website.
Maybe absolutely
that
right.
One too.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's WILL.UIUC.EDU. You can pledge there. Take a look at our archives. We have other information about the station there. So if you have never visited our website, that would be a good thing to do. Well, thank you very much, Jack. We want to get back here to our conversation with Nancy Pearl. She's executive director of the Washington Center for the Book. And the Washington we're talking there is about is Washington State. She makes her home in Seattle. She was the person who developed the program. If everybody read the same book, they did it first in Seattle in 1998, and now many other cities have done it. Here in Champaign-Urbana, we're doing such a thing, sponsored by the Champaign Public Library. And the book is Ray Bradbury's novel, Fahrenheit 451. I do want to mention, too, that the library has organized all kinds of events in connection with this and will be going on now through June. And if you're interested in finding out about some of these things and you do have internet access, you can go to the website of the Champaign Public Library and find out. Or, of course, you can just stop by the library, and I'm sure they'd be happy to see you. And if you'd like to talk here with us and with our guest, Nancy Pearl, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's get back to some callers here, and we will go to our line number one, and this is someone in Urbana.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I was wondering, Nancy, what is it that you did to ensure that the book list that you compiled contained enough works so that it could be culturally inclusive and representative of all of the different racial and ethnic groups in the U.S., because I'm aware that many of those works by authors of color tend to go out of print much faster than others.
Well, one of the things that I did, I'm very lucky that I'm the sort of reader who likes almost any book that has interesting characters and is well written. So that's the first thing. I read very widely myself. The second thing is that Booklust is filled with books that are both in print and out of print. So we're not just talking about books in Booklust that were published in the last couple of years. And thirdly, there's sections in the book on writers, many writers of color, Hispanic novels, African-American women writers, African-American men writers, writers from various countries around the world. So it is a very, very, very culturally diverse book. And Indian writers, just almost, really, I have to just say, even though I wrote the book, it has something in it for everybody.
That's great. And if you could, before I go, could you recommend for those of us that may want to look for those out-of-print works by authors of color on where we can find them? Thanks.
Well, the place where I always start when I'm looking for an out-of-print book is a site called bookfinder.com. And then you can just type in the author or the title or as much as you know about the author and the title. And I've had very, very, very good luck finding the books that I wanted to look, that I was looking for. And I have to say that when I wrote this book, I began with the books on my own bookshelf, but then soon realized that I just needed to replace a lot of books that had disappeared over the years. So I had to go out and look at many used bookstores and then go online to look for books. But I just reread a wonderful novel by an African-American writer named Colson Whitehead. And the book is, it was his first novel, and it was called, it's called The Intuitionist. And it's about a young African-American woman who is an elevator inspector. And it's set in a kind of parallel universe to ours. And it's absolutely wonderful.
Okay.
One of my favorite African-American women writers is Octavia Butler as well. So those are two writers that I would really recommend. Or Sandra Cisneros' new novel, Caramello, which came out too late to be in this Booklust, but will be in Booklust 2, although I do mention Sandra Cisneros' earlier books.
Well, I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Let's continue. We'll go to line number 2, and this is a caller in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. I have a call that I hope doesn't put you on the spot too much. I understand that you were the model for the action figure, the librarian action figure.
I was.
And I really love that, being an irreverent librarian myself. I really enjoyed that was done, but I was interested to get your comments about the controversy that caused within the library field, because I wasn't surprised at the controversy, given the fact that there are some that take the job a little more seriously than others. So I just wanted to get your comments about that.
Well, first of all, I think that we all take our job seriously. I think the problem is when we take ourselves too seriously.
Right.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. Yes.
I think it's really important that we can laugh at ourselves. And when we were talking about, now the librarian action figure is 5 inches. I'm about 5'2", so it's a pretty good proportional representation. And there's a button at the back, and if you push the button and have the arm set in just the right way, the right arm comes up as though it were saying shush, although it just might as well be pointing to a book on the top shelf. As say shush. Now some people objected to the fact that it said shush, but when we were talking about what action the librarian should do, we needed an action that everybody associated with the field of librarianship, rightly or wrongly.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought about the scene in Audrey Hepburn's Breakfast at Tiffany's when she goes into the New York Public Library. And all the librarians there say, shh, 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 So we knew when we heard that that was exactly what we needed to do. Now, we believed that all librarians had this great sense of humor. We think so highly of librarians, being one myself, that we think all librarians have a great sense of humor. Little did we know that there are some out there who don't have such a good sense of humor.
Right.
So
well, I appreciated it.
I'm glad. I have to say, so did about 55,000 other people.
Good. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call. I have read a lot about this, including the sort of some of the hoo-ha when it was first introduced, but have subsequently seen, I think, probably in great numbers, librarians who thought, well, this is a hoot, that's very funny, and they like it, and I think probably a lot of librarians have gone out and bought your action figure for themselves and for their friends who are in the same business. In fact, one of our development staff who has a library degree and yet who went astray and now is working on raising money for here. There's one on the premises, even as we speak, in our building. I was going to bring her in and set her here with me in studio, and I thought, no. She's over in Rita's office, but there's even one in the building. This was produced by, I'm looking now at the website of the Accoutrements company there in Seattle, and it's part of a very unconventional series of action figures that include figures of Edgar Allan Poe, Beethoven, Einstein, William Shakespeare, Jesus, Moses, and Cleopatra, Ben Franklin, Sigmund Freud, and the kids down at my favorite coffee shop, they have one of the barista figures down there, which is also here. And, of course, the librarian action figure modeled on our guest, Nancy Pearl.
And I have to say that the librarian action figure is their biggest-selling action figure ever.
Really?
Yes. And the reason it came about, and this is a story I'd love to tell because it's such a great tribute to librarians. I was at a dinner party with the owner of Accoutrements, and he was telling us that there had been newspaper articles and some of the tabloids about how the Jesus action figure was performing miracles for the people who bought it. And I said, but Mark, you know, the people who really perform miracles every single day are librarians. And someone else said, yeah, Mark, you ought to make a librarian action figure. And then we all fell off our chairs laughing because, I mean, who would have thought? And then the next thing you know, there I am, immortalized in plastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think now other people in other professions, the music professors, the physicists, the English professors,
right.
You know, they ought to be going out there and having their own. The psychiatrists ought to all have a Sigmund Freud action figure. They ought to be going on there supporting the action figures of their archetypal figures. I definitely think so. Well, in any case, if you'd like to call in and talk with our guest, Nancy Pearl, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I guess in reading a little bit about you, it seems that you were one of those people who, as a child, found the library as a great place of refuge.
I did. I grew up in a family, in a home that was both unhappy and it seemed to me to be dangerous to be there. And so I spent my childhood in Detroit at my local public library, and it was two librarians there, a Miss Whitehead and Miss Long, who really, really took this unhappy, miserably unhappy child and turned her into a reader. And I knew when I was 10 that all that I ever wanted to be when I grew up was a children's librarian, just like Miss Whitehead, because I thought, what greater gift could anybody give than to give another child the gift of books, the gift of the love of reading? And so Book Lust really grew out of that love. There are books in Book Lust that I read at the Parkman Branch Library. I remember where I was when I discovered the novels of Robert Heinlein. And the first Robert Heinlein book I read was Space Cadet. And that's in Book Lust. I mean, I love that kind of continuity.
Yeah, I think I like the idea of maybe people going back just to see what it's like to read something of their childhood, of their adolescence. And I guess I think probably, I know there are a lot of people who are lifelong lovers of science fiction, but right. probably for a lot of other folks, the time when you read science fiction is when you're a teenager, and that you kind of get away from that. And I was just, you know, thinking in my case, I have on my bookshelves at home still some very battered paperback editions of Ray Bradbury
mm-hmm.
that cost at the time 60 cents,
right.
All of that. And, you know, I still have my copy of The Martian Chronicles and of The Illustrated Man, but I have not opened those books. I guess they meant something to me, so I kept them. But I haven't opened them in a long time. And I guess I kind of like the idea of maybe revisiting some things that you had read when you were younger just to see if they still mean something or if they mean something different to you reading them as an adult.
And I think what happens a lot of times when we reread books that we loved as children is that what we find is that they no longer speak to us the way they did when we were kids. I mean, I have books like that just meant so much to me when I was growing up. And when I reread them, I kind of wince because they're not nearly as well written as I remember them. But it's because we're in a different place in our lives than we were then. And I think every time you read a book, it's like you're reading a different book because you're in a different place.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with someone else, someone calling from the campus on our line number one. Hello.
Yeah, I was just wondering if the guest had heard of something called bookcrossing.com, which is basically sort of a, if you love this book, set it free.
Uh-huh.
Where you basically find a book you like and you have read and you have a book plate that you put in it and say, you know, this book came from Urbana, Illinois, and you leave it in a public place where someone else can pick it up, and the idea is that the book will eventually get passed around a lot, you know, maybe across the country, and you can track it on the website.
Yeah, I think that's just, I love that idea. What I would love is that if there was some way that we could talk to those people who had read that book so that we could see what they thought about it, too.
Yeah, I think that there is a way that you can, that people who find the books can respond and say, I picked this book up, and I thought it was great, and I left it at such and such a place. So I think you actually can track a book
uh-huh.
that you've dropped. So I just thought that was a really neat idea and a way for, you know, a lot of good books to get passed around.
And I think what that speaks to is I know when I read a book that I love, what I really want to do is give it to somebody else because I want them to share that love
yeah.
with me. And there are some books, I think, that just demand... there are some books that you read, and as soon as you turn over the last page, you have questions about the ending of the book, and you just want to talk to somebody about what really happened.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite books is a book by Tim O'Brien called In the Lake of the Woods, and it's a book that the ending is so ambiguous that I don't think, no matter how much discussion you can come to, I don't think there'll ever be a consensus. Well, I think the consensus that people come to is not one that I want to accept, is what I think the problem is. But there are some books that you just want to share and you just want to talk about.
Yeah, I just thought it was a really neat idea. And it says something about, you know, the experience of reading and people wanting to share that.
So right.
I would bring that up. So thanks.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And other questions are certainly welcome. We have maybe about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus with Nancy Pearl. She is executive director of the Washington Center for the Book. She makes her home in Seattle. She was the person who, in 1998, developed that program, If All of Us Here in Whatever City Read the Same Book. It started there and spread to a lot of other places. She's also locally known for her weekly book reviews on Seattle's NPR affiliate KUOW. And her book of suggested reading is titled Book Lust. It's published by Sasquatch, and it is paperback and conveniently pocket-sized so that you might take it with you to the library. And she said she's also working on a sequel, Book Lust 2, The Morning After, because as she explained in the beginning of the program, when Book Lust was all done and had gone to press, she suddenly woke up and thought, oh, wait a minute, what about... And there were a lot of other books, so enough apparently to fill a second volume.
So, David, what do you like to read?
Oh, gosh. Well, I for this program, because we talk to a lot of authors, and basically there are people who've written books about political, social issues, history, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. For fun reading, I guess I do try to read novels. I'm reading all the time for the show, and I like History, well-written history is great, and occasionally science, but I'm not all that bright. So if it's real difficult, I keep interviewing people who've written books about cosmology, and I keep somehow thinking, if I continue to do this, one day it will sink in. Hasn't yet. I suppose lately I've been a while back I decided I really wanted to read Tony Hillerman.
Uh-huh.
And I'm kind of mental, so I decided I'm going to read the books in the order that he wrote them. So that's lately, I guess, I've been reading a lot of Tony Hillerman. So I've been out there in the West with Jim Chi and Joe Leiphorn.
Right. And Tony Hillerman's early books are just fabulous. I mean, I think that The Fly on the Wall the one with woman in the title, Whistling Woman. Listening Woman, yeah. Right, is just wonderful.
Yeah.
I remember that so well.
Yeah, I think I guess I have become more and more of a mystery lover. And I guess one of the things I like about the form is that it's so durable, and you can take it anywhere, anytime, any place. And I guess I like reading, particularly in the last couple of years, I've read a number that are either set in Asia or written by Asian writers, Japanese and Chinese detectives that I think mm-hmm. are pretty interesting. Not very long ago, in fact, I read two by a Canadian writer. And now, of course, I'm not going to remember the man's name. The first book was called The Shanghai Murders, and the second, I'm sort of drawing a blank, that were set sort of in contemporary modern People's Republic of China, and
uh-huh.
he's a police detective. And I enjoyed it, and as much for the novel setting and odd characters, just it's a chance to do what a book does so nicely, is it takes you to a very different place.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, and I think that's what readers... I read for exactly that reason, to be someplace else, but also I think to learn. And I think you can really learn from almost any book. I mean, I call it sort of recreational learning. You can be transported into any kind of locale. There's a wonderful older series that you might want to go to the library to check out. It's called the Yellow Thread series, Yellow Thread Street series, and it's set in Hong Kong before, when it was still a British colony, before it was turned over to China. But it's a police procedural series, and you just grow to love the detectives in there. There are about 12 mysteries in that series, and the first one is called Yellow Thread Street.
Well, great. That sounds like it'd be just right up my alley. All right. Very good. We have some other callers here. Let's talk next with someone in Urbana on line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Talking about sharing books brings up the question, and if you want to have a dialogue with somebody, bringing up the question of marking up books. When I was growing up, I didn't own very many books, and we just didn't mark up library books. And so it's really hard for me to think about writing in the books that I own. But my sister-in-law was talking about what she does. She learned in part from her father, who would write in his own books, and he would keep a list at the front of the book with page numbers and little commentary about what it was on the page he was interested in. And she's a professor at the University of Kentucky and lends books, her own books out to people, professional books, and writes in them. And then the people who borrow them, her students, also write in them. So it ends up being a dialogue. When they give the books back, she's interested to see what notes they've made. I thought that was really interesting to do. If I'm zipping along in a book, though, I also I have difficulty taking time to stop and mark things. I'm in a book group, so I want to make notes for myself so I can have something intelligent to say about the book and also to mark really choice quotes. But if I'm sipping along, I have a hard time taking time out to mark the book, and I'm also often lying in bed on my side reading, and it's kind of hard to mark. And so I'm just curious about what other people do. And sometimes I use little Post-it notes, and sometimes I treated myself to some of these metal...
Oh, the darts.
Darts that archival. They won't
uh-huh.
destroy the book. But then you have to fish those out and stick them on. So I'm just curious to what people do for that.
Well, I'm too much of a library user to to even mark up my own books. So I think old habits are too ingrained. But I do keep a notebook of my favorite quotations. And so I can go back now, and it started way back in 1964. I've been writing down poems that I found or cutting them out of magazines and good quotations from books. So I can go back and sort of be transported back. And in that sense, I love the idea of writing in books so you can see, having a dialogue, not only with the people who read it, but with the book itself. I think that's kind of cool. But when you talked about writing in books, I sort of got shivers up. I think I'm too much of a librarian and a library user
to think about that. Library books, but your own books. I had the same feeling. It was really hard for me. But then I decided, well, you know, I have to do what works for me, and so it depends.
Right.
Usually I just make notes or make temporary markings that won't actually be permanent in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like those darts or little post-it notes, and I sometimes go back and take notes if I'm being really, really virtuous book group member. Thanks a bunch.
All right, thank you. Let's talk with somebody here in Indiana, line four. Hello.
Hello.
There in line four. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. I wonder if you'd say a few words about, you mentioned earlier in the program, publishers don't keep books in print too long. I was wondering, I mainly read academic books, so I already know about that in some sense, but I was wondering about other kinds of books, fiction, nonfiction, how to itself, revealing, all that kind of stuff. Which one of those, you know, or you better get them now because they're not going to be around a while.
Oh, that's so hard to know, because the problem is that my understanding is that if a book is not selling, there's no reason for a publisher to keep it in print. And publishers have wonderful, wonderful backlist, that is, books that came out in previous years, that if we could only alert people to the existence of perhaps any book that somebody hasn't read is a new book. So if we could alert people to the existence of those wonderful backlist books, which is basically what my book, Booklist, does, then there would be a reason for publishers to keep those books in print. But if people aren't buying them, I mean, if they're not walking into the bookstores and picking them up, then there's no reason for publishers to keep them in print.
One of the things that we see periodically is the people declare that reading is dying, and that the percentage of Americans that read regularly continues to decline. And yet at the same time, we have a lot of books, of course, and I see people in them. And apparently one of the statistics comes off a fact sheet that I got in connection with the fact that it is Library Week, says that the U.S. has more public libraries than it has McDonald's. So I guess I never quite know what to make of that, all this talk about the death of reading.
Yeah, I think that all that talk was a little too premature. I don't think that reading for pleasure is ever going to die. I think that the ways that we access information and the fact that we tended to use reference books for information access, that's changing. It's easier, and more people now are online, and they can get their information through databases, both reputable and non-reputable databases, which is one reason why it's good to use your library computer to access those databases, which are vetted and selected by librarians. So it's not reading for pleasure. I don't think reading for pleasure is ever going to end. There's too many wonderful books. Do too many wonderful things for that aspect of our lives to change so dramatically. But reference books, I think we're going to see fewer and fewer reference books in print and more reference books available online. And in many ways, using the Oxford English Dictionary online is easier than pulling out that microscope and, you know, and looking up a word. So that's where I see the differences.
Hmm. Well, I think we're about the point we're going to have to stop. Nancy, I want to thank you very much for talking with us. It's been a great pleasure to have you.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Our guest, Nancy Pearl, she is the executive director of the Washington Center for the Book. She makes her home in Seattle. And her book, that's kind of her personal list of recommendations, is Book Lust, Recommended Reading for Every Mood, Moment, and Reason. It's published by Sasquatch Books. It's a paperback and is truly pocket-sized, so you can put it in your pocket and take it with you to the library. And it contains various kinds of recommendations for reading, both fiction and nonfiction, organized in different categories. And there will be a sequel, too, so you can look forward to Book Lust 2, The Morning After, coming soon at a bookstore or library near you. Now, if you would like to have a copy of Book Lust, we can make that possible if you will call in and make a pledge to this radio station. Jack Brighton, a former producer of Focus, and currently our web guy, our director of internet operations, is here with me in the studio. So how can people get a copy of this book?
All they have to do is call the pledge line at 244-9455, make a pledge of $75, and we will send you a copy of this book, Book Lust. Wonderful paperback edition. It is something that you will get a lot of great ideas from for other books to read and spend your time profitably reading enjoyably. And we really do believe in books here. I know, you know, we're just talking about online stuff, and I'm an online kind of guy, all right? But there's nothing like holding a physical book in your hand and having that to read at your leisure. It's just something about the whole experience. So, you know, we like the fact that you like to listen to the show, but we also want people to actually read because we think that's very good for you.
And we have, Jack earlier mentioned that we have that website with archives. We've interviewed quite a few authors on the show, a number of novelists. The interviews are there on the website. So if you're
thousands of them.
You can go and you take a look at them. You can also make your pledge online by going to the website, WILL.UIUC.edu.
Absolutely. All you have to do is you make a credit card pledge online at that that web address, or you can call our pledge line right now, 244-9455, and get on board.
All right. Programs here are made possible by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design gemstone roundtables and conflict-free diamonds.